Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we like to invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So let us know if there are any topics you'd like covered or guests that we should reach out to for future episodes. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are following or subscribed to NIMSY Insight. We are coming to you live today on LinkedIn, Facebook, X, a bunch of other stuff, I'm sure. But most people join us live over on LinkedIn, so come join the party, and we'll bring your comments up on screen, questions if you have any for our guests today. So, without further ado, let's get into our guest today. Welcome back. We're going to be talking about the world of software localization strategy, specifically how the game is changing for teams who are under more pressure than ever to move faster, automate more, and still deliver great experiences in every language. So if you've ever battled with short strings that arrive with zero context, if you've struggled with localization, getting bolted onto the end of a release cycle, or watched your continuous workflow grind to a halt because of manual file handling, this is the episode for you. Joining me today are two people who have been pushing the boundaries of what software localization should look like: Adam Asnes, founder and CEO of Lingoport, and Olivier Libouban. Pardon my pronunciation, Olivier, Lingoport's VP of Product Development. These guys have spent years studying how software teams really build products, how design starts in Figma, how developers often never see the UI strengths they're responsible for, and how localization too often becomes the release bottleneck nobody wants to talk about. So today, we're going to dig into this. I've been chatting with Adam a little bit. Adam's got good ideas. He's there on the front lines. Well, both of y'all are there on the front lines working with localization teams every day. And I have a special trait. This makes my job super easy today because you guys came with some slides. So we just get to look at the slides and we can talk about the slides. That makes my job so easy. I don't need to come up with stupid questions. Welcome to the show.
Right. Yeah, we've got slides. We've got stuff to show live. I mean, there's the stuff that we're going to talk about, there's nothing like having the visual component of that.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn the reins over to you, Adam, because I kind of want to hear your expertise. But first, before we get into that, Adam, Olivier, tell me a little bit about Lingoport. I gave a basic introduction. What do you guys do? Who do you work with? Sure. What problems does Lingoport solve? Just so that it kind of provides context for what we're going to see today.
Sure. So Lingoport is totally focused on the problems around localization for software specifically, not marketing content. We're not a translation company. We create, the automated pipelines that help companies with lots of products and teams, or even small companies, localize continuously. And that literally starts from how the code is written. Our first product was Globalizer. That was all about internationalization. And in the last 10 years, we've had a lot of focus on continuous localization systems because we saw over and over again that keeping up with change and the pace of releases, once you scale across lots of teams and maybe multiple products, that gets hard to manage. Companies have gotten better, but there's still a lot of onus on developers, localization, technical staff, and the like that maybe doesn't need to be there. I joke that Microsoft Excel is still maybe the most popular localization management tool, which is a bad thing.
Yeah, so, is it really a joke?
Right.
It's out there. It's happening. People are using. Hey.
Right.
I mean, no hate. Week, no hate from me.
Shows something very innovative, but it was literally a macro within Excel. So I'm like, come on.
I've written a few macros in my time. I'm very proud of my macros. Yeah, yeah. So
It's still out there. And, you know, it's useful for people, but it is a limiter in terms of throughput. I don't think I have to talk about that too much.
Right.
But that's the company, you know, really everything from hands-on keyboards to fix IT&N issues to design development. But also, we've got a whole basis of large companies that use our software, even though they might have a TMS, because we make handling the software aspect of localization so easy. I mean, it's literally like click and, you know, point towards a source repo, and recursively we find all the localization information right in that repo across organizations. So it just scales really nice without having involve developers or IT teams and the like. I mean, it's just really quick.
And you're going
to click on another button for where you want the translations to go.
And so, you can show us, right? You're going to click around and show us a demo a little bit later on, right?
Yeah, but I specifically want to talk about new functionality. And really, the idea for this talk really got set off maybe last month. Tucker, you gave a really nice talk with someone. And she was showing her continuous localization process. And I looked at it and I was like, you know, that's very good, but there's a tremendous opportunity that we're focused around that I want to talk about so that localization actually comes much sooner than anybody is doing it right now. And we're just releasing this.
It's a process thing, just as an introduction, because I think Adam painted the large picture. I come from the software industry world. So I'm a software engineer. I have a master in computer science. I have a diploma of, I'm an engineer in France here. And so my career was software engineering. I never talked to a localization person during my pure career as software engineer before I moved to Lingoport. So I did something in operating systems and B2B and B2C and geographical information system and scientific data. Nothing that I did ever touched localization. And I want to emphasize that, because as software engineers, we have a focus, a skill set, a way to interact with people, even a personality. That's not at all localization. We don't talk localization. We don't care, even though I may speak a couple of languages, we don't talk localization. We don't talk translation. We don't talk TMSs. We don't look at that well. We need to focus on delivering products, features, functionality, quality, performance. We have a lot of technical assets that we need to manage. We need to be at the top of our category, and it's that world. When you talk about software localization, you need to have that dev team bridge the gap to the localization team, and that's what we do. We bridge that gap in between the skill set, the process, the people, the way of interacting, everything. A really different world. So that, I think that's where we position ourselves.
And I can confirm, as if it needed confirming, I can confirm there are frequently gaps, right? So being able, having tools available to bridge those gaps is always a good thing here. Adam, I'm going to bring up the slides here and turn it over to you. Walk us through what we got today.
Sure. So when we talk about software, again, not marketing materials, but software, there are certain constraints that we all have to be aware of. You know, most of us know this, but I'm just going to review it so we're on the same page here. Strings that need to be translated, those are the words that are part of the UI. They're very short. They might be one word. They might be five words. There might be an error message. It could be all kinds of things, but there's no context for the translator to take advantage of by itself by looking through the files. You know, MT doesn't deal with context, but you get the idea. Like a word like premium can mean multiple things, and there's going to be different words for that depending upon the language, and so it's got its own challenges, software. There's a lot of time pressure. I mean, development moves fast. If localization is slow and uncovers a bug, well, you know, if it's running behind development, the developers have moved on. And that's why, you know, I have joked over the years that localization bugs go to Jira or any bug tracking system to die, because developers have just moved on. So you're stuck with, you know, inferior issues. And that's, oops, I put my thumb up. And that's that you're kind of just stuck with over time. And we see organizations that have had localization bugs for 5 years and more because of that capability. The other thing I really like to emphasize is that, you know, here, this word visibility here, one of the tenets of agile development is that you can demonstrate your features, you can demonstrate your work, and you have to do that before it's complete. And localization kind of falls out of that because it happens later. The developer themselves doesn't have visibility to localization. It's something that sort of gets bolted on and handled later. And in most cases, the designer doesn't see it either, unless you're very sophisticated. And that's kind of a shame. So this is a challenge worth improving upon. The other thing I'm going to show is like this circle, this is like a graphic you can pick up anywhere on the web. It's really simplistic. There's a lot of fuzziness between the different stages. You know, you don't necessarily wait until implementation is done to start testing. You don't wait till everything is designed necessarily to start implementation. You may be working on backend, front end might happen in different stages. So there's a lot of blurriness between this, but the unfortunate thing is typically localization waits till some benchmark like code freeze or something like that, typically, before it gets done, even started.
And I'm curious, like, just to build upon this, right? Like you say, software localization is different, and I'm preach it, right? I'm hearing everything, agreeing with everything that you're saying right now. But I guess my question would be, like, so what, right? Software localization is different, and therefore, here's the pains that it causes, or here's the challenges that it creates, or you know what I'm saying? And forgive me if I get ahead of myself. I haven't looked ahead in the slide deck.
Bring me back to that, because it's really easy for me to fall. I get all rounded up about, you know, how the sausage is made, you know, so like how it works, right? So the problem with that is, number one, through costs, and that includes developer time, that goes up. Velocity goes down, and I mean velocity for global releases often suffers. Bugs crop up that aren't addressed. So as a localization manager, you're sort of the guardian of your brand, your products worldwide. Mm-hmm. And so you want the very best outcome. So just, you know, I look at localization as really a main feature of UI UX. I mean, it's not a minor thing. I mean, people really, rightly so, you know, ruminate over the color blue, or, you know, the shadow on a button, you know, because those things have a real impact on the user experience. Well, localization does too. I mean, you know, we talk to organizations with like heavy machinery, and the UI is broken in these languages where, you know, it doesn't fit, or it's the wrong translation or something. Like this stuff is real, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and that's the cost of, you know, maybe not having the optimal process, and nobody can see it. Right?
Well, and it's hard because there's a ton of localization tools available on the market, and those tools serve different purposes, solve different problems, right? Shameless plug for the NIMSY Language Technology Radar. We catalog all of those tools.
Yes.
Go check it out at NIMSY.com, right?
Right.
But like my point is, the reason there's so many different tools is because there's so many different challenges to solve.
Right.
And there is no one single best tool that solves all the problems. There is no single one tool that solves that can do, you know, content and, well, there are actually tools that can do content and product strings, right? Mm-hmm. But there's different challenges with those different inputs for those tools. So right. They get more and more complex.
Speaking to that, for instance, not all, but most of our customers have a TMS. We are not a
right.
TMS.
And that's kind of where I'm headed with this. I really want to make sure it's clear to people that the problems you're looking at, like, you're not coming at from a perspective of a TMS. You're an additional service.
Right. Although, you know, there are customers that just directly connect to like a localization vendor's portal and let them deal with the TMS kind of
stuff. That works too.
But
all right, let's get back to it.
Yep, got it. So, you know, with all this, there's some other things going on presently. I don't know a localization manager that isn't getting pressures to use AI. And I put AI in quotes because it means a lot of different things to different people. I mean, very realistically, you can say MT is AI. But when they say AI, they really mean an LLM.
Right.
Their management is looking at cost, development management is looking at speed. They are using LLM augmentation in their product development in all kinds of very interesting ways. They kind of expect that every department is doing that. On the localization side, you know, we talk about quality and, you know, I'll talk about that triangle there. I really think the better, I didn't make this up. I got this from somebody else, but I really think what we mean is trust. Mm. Can I trust that this translation won't be a hallucination? There we go. And from developers, this is a literal quote from a developer just recently. Oh, localization, it's a boat anchor.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, so by that, I mean, it comes later. It comes back at them in some way that they don't really care about because they can't see it. It slows down their velocity. Olivia, you have anything to answer that? You look like you sort of, no? Okay.
Maybe you're going to tell me the story about how it's a good thing because it anchors them in reality and anchors them.
No,
it's an anchor tied around their neck.
It's not like you're dragging it.
Yeah, I was hopeful.
No.
I'm seeing this, and maybe you'll talk about this too, as far as kind of keeping with this theme of the divide between dev and loc, right? Or product and loc, whatever that divide is that we're trying to bridge the gap, right? When it comes to that, like, I'm seeing out there a lot more dev product engineering teams take a look at localization and start to ask kind of tough questions about, like, is localization even... Here's how I put it. I think over the next 5 years, our industry is going to be having a debate. And that debate is between, is localization a tech problem to solve or is it a human problem to solve? Right? And
the answer is yes.
Exactly. Exactly. Notice I'm not picking a side on this debate. It's going to be a fascinating debate. It's an exciting time to be in our industry. Right? But that's the question we need to ask.
Well, you know, changes in our industry has had us really, over the last 2 years, take a whole new look at where do we want our products going, you know, and you know, we have a release now that really takes a very big step in that direction. There have been little steps up until now. Now we're like have a big step, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
You know, I've got that triangle there. That's a famous marketing triangle, you know, pick any two. And it's a lie. I want to be clear. In many cases, if you have a linear solution, you pick any two. You can either have it fast and low cost, fast or and maybe high quality, but then it's not going to be low cost. You get the idea. In my mind, the whole purpose of technological advancement is to shrink that triangle, is to make the different distance between those three poles get smaller and closer together. So there's a little tiny triangle in the center. That's where you want to go. Where, yes, there might be some trade-offs in shrinking the triangle, but essentially you want to bring all three of those attributes closer together.
Well, because this is, I mean, everyone that's been in sales or marketing or whatever knows this triangle, or just been around business for a while knows this triangle. And I've seen it said, used, and I would say abused, you know, the whole, do you want it done quick? Do you want it done cheap? Right. Or do you want it done well? Pick two, right? It's kind of like this adversarial, like, well, take a hike, you know, you can't have everything that you want. And I'm not saying it's not true. It is true, right? But this idea that the triangle can't be shrunk is a misconception. And this is where you're talking about shrinking the triangle, because especially with the rate of change of rate of improvement of technology, the triangle absolutely can be shrunk. We're doing things today in localization at large scales that we would be burned at the stake for 10 years ago because people think that we were witches, right?
Okay, I'm going to quote you on that. You know, one thing I also just kind of mention that, you know, we're guilty of this too. Like, as an industry, we talk about continuous localization, but it's really like a sped up waterfall process. We wait till the end, then we do all the localization, we put it back, and then, you know, we test, oh, we'll have another iteration, you know.
Yeah.
It's just not flowing with how people do things. And, you know, the promise of all these systems is an always on localization. But if we're waiting till later in the process to start it, it's not always on. So the other thing, like I have this little bullet, we've seen how the sausage is made. What holds up continuous localization is human factors. And the human factors are things like the translator inadvertently broke a tag within the file, and now essentially the code is broken, right? Or the ICU was not properly handled, and so now pluralization is kind of broken. The other thing that we see happen is on the developer side, maybe there's a duplicate string ID or an improper file format, or it was returned in an improper file format. All those things are part of the stuff that mucks up the speed. So you want to catch that stuff and, you know, illustrate it and all that. But the worst part of the sausage being made is, and we just saw this, you know, with a client this week, where we see a project that was started a month ago, for whatever reason, got forgotten about, you know? So our stuff picked it off, kicked off the project, and it didn't come back for a month. So that's really slow in development time. But that happens. That's an extreme example, but this happens. There's a missing language. There's a missing kit. There's, you know, something. And it's all, you know, at the end of the day, we're very human dependent. So, we looked together at, you know, this whole process. And right now, again, you know, this is sort of a linear, and I mentioned this stuff tends to blur. But what if localization really started here? And I'm not just talking a simple plug-in. Most development these days has really had a sea change in that it's designed in quite elaborate formats using, I mean, the overwhelming tool is Figma. It's not Canva, it's Figma, right? And then the developers look at that design and they recreate that in code. So that design essentially gets thrown out, you know, the material. It's just a pretty picture. It's like designing in PowerPoint, if you think. That's not code, right? So the developer renders the code that matches that design. But the other thing that's really happened, and I remember, you know, years ago, I was with a friend who was working for a large, you know, commercial brand that everybody knows. And he said, developers aren't even allowed to write a string in our company, right? We're going to get rid of developer English that isn't brand compliant and all that. There's a product management team that falls under that writes the UI, and that's where it's done. And the developers just plug that in, like they just copy the strings in. Of course, you know, in reality, there's changes that happen, development, last minute, some error message or something like that. But the bulk of it happens during the design phase. So we look at it and we say, if we're going to move localization truly as a service that's integrated with development and take advantage of LLMs as best we can, we actually start localization here during product design.
Well, and I don't think you're being too controversial here, at least to the folks that are in this audience, right? I think that everyone loves the idea of shifting left.
Right, but there's more to it.
Yeah.
So instead of just rendering it in Figma, we actually create all the localization files and stick them in the repo for the developers to pick up.
Okay.
They don't have to write a single key. We do that. So literally the localization is ready for the developers to render as part of their recreating the interface. It's there already. So we're all the way left. We're beating the development team with localization that's ready. And I'll show you how we do that.
Yeah.
In the demo. And you know, but it's super cool. So essentially the workflow, you know, again, it looks like this. You know, there's going to be lots of cycles of this, but designer team creates some design in Figma, right? We automatically capture that, bring it in, suck it into Localizer. There's nobody has to remember to do this. It's just sucked into Localizer. But not only do we have the picture of what this looks like, we relate where every string is on the screen. So we map out this string goes here, this string goes here. And we send it in with keys to either an LLM, which is the fastest way. And there's three levels of prompting that go with it. There's the string level with the visual component. So you're submitting to the LLM a visual representation of what the UI looks like. You have a project prompt, you know, that might say, like, this is an application that's used for choosing the color of paint or whatever it may be. And then a system prompt, which maybe says, you know, translate this with these parameters, and this is for a software application, keep it brief, like those kinds of things. So between all three, when you go directly to an LLM or to an LLM through the TMS, you kind of, you get fantastic results. I mean, we did a bunch of research, which we presented in a webinar yesterday, that shows you get just about human level translation that comes out of that system with that level of prompting. It comes back into Localizer. You don't have to worry about tags, obviously, or anything like that, because it's all checked automatically and it's all just throughput. And it gets pushed to both the designer, so they see the effect of their work very quickly, and to the repo, so it's available for the developer. Now, you can also, if you go through a TMS, you can run your quality analysis on that and point the human at where you think they most need to look and edit. And that can happen later as a part of a webhook. But now you've got time between design and development to do that. You're still preceding the completion of development. And if there are last minute changes on development, well, we pick those up anyway. So those get cycled through the same way, and there's still that context that's available. It's still available. We have, you know, not only can we collect context through Figma, but we can do it through screenshots. We can do it through web browser-based automated captures. It's just like all part of it. So, you know, what it looks like, you know, within Localizer, you basically pick a string and you can see the word billing here is highlighted, you know, the highlight is ours, but systematically it's highlighted for the UI, the word billing here again. Now, that's the same way that helps improve human-based translation. And so when the humans go to like review the localization that's done by the LLM later, they still get the visual context as well. So they get that as to work with.
Yeah, it's huge.
But it's the same principle. It works well for the LLM. It works well for the translator. And the developers get everything. So, you know, you might have a question or two, and I'm going to close my screen so that Olivier can share his screen. I've got a couple, nobody's going to be able to copy this, but I've got a couple of URLs that show this on YouTube. But with that, I'm going to stop sharing, turn it over to Olivier. And while he's setting up, if you have a question or you always have a question.
Yeah, let me look through here, see if there's anything. I think so far, so good. Yeah, let's move forward. Take it away.
All right. This is Olivier. I'm going to start with something rather simple. It's translating some strings that are in the repositories, and there are only four strings. That's it. So as a software developer, you're going to have something like a repo where you stash your work. Typically, it's code. So it's Java code, or you know, you're creating your application based on some design. But let's say that you want to translate this coat and washer. When we go to Command Center, we hook up to this repository specifically for that application. And you can see how those are displayed in the string part of Localizer. You can see coat and washer. Now, the interesting part is prompting to start with. If you go to ChatGPT here, which is set up on this particular system here for Localizer, how are you going to translate coat and washer just by sending that over? For that, I have three levels. The first one is translate coat into French. That's it. So in this first prompt, when you do that, you're going from the English here and you're ending up in the French here. This is the result of a very simple prompt. So if you don't know prompting, you can really direct the translation in a strange way. As opposed to a translation, the LLM gives you, this is how I think about this translation. In the context of a hardware store, coat could be referred to a layer of paint or a finish. The translation of coat in this context could be couche. So it's like, well, that's what I'm thinking about. So if you just give it some prompt and you don't know what you're doing with it, this is not going to be very useful for a application. You are not going to display this string in your software application for code. The second part when you do this is we're going to go to another input here. We have three different things going on here. We have the second part where we say, okay, translate this, but I just want the translation. Don't give me any explanation. And this is the result that it gives you. Oh, you don't want an explanation? You don't want the red? I'm going to give you this. Couche, couche, rondelle, rondelle. The problem is that those are actually not the same words that we're trying to do. One is a coat that you put on, and one is a coat that is for an actual paint, a coat of paint. So with us in Localizer, if you add the notion of a context image, like for coat, it's going to be this. At that point, you might be able to differentiate between this coat and that coat. And you may be able to differentiate between this washer and that washer. By the way, as a translator, to translate just coat, if you get coat and washer and that's all you get, and that's, again, what Adam mentioned earlier, in software application, it may not be code, it may be file or empty file. Is that too empty a file or is this an empty file? Very, very different. If you say load, is it to load up something or is it a load of something? When you say charge, is it paying something? Those are the kind of strings you get from a software application. And you may get two strings today and five strings tomorrow. So even a human translator would have a really hard time to come up with the right translation for this code or that one. That they would be random if you want. But when we pass now the context to ChatGPT in that instance, we're going to get a different number here. We're going to get number 3. And that's after passing that context over. And so what you're going to see now is it was Kush before, and it's Kush for a paint, which is right. But now for a coat, it's manteau, which is right. And a washer is a lavage. So that context narrows down, disambiguates what those simple words are so that you can have a much better initial translation. It doesn't mean that you want to just do an initial translation with an NLM, and that's it. But I wanted to show you very simply how for a dev file, like the properties file that you're seeing here, just by adding prompting and then adding the level that we have in terms of capturing context, which are images, you really narrow what the translation is going to be. And like Adam was saying, if that's part of a TMS, we're going to pass the prompt and the image together with a string for the translator or for the MT or for the LLM, so that the entire workflow will benefit quality-wise from what we're passing. Only on the dev side do you have that ability. Once it's passed to the localization side of things, you don't have really the ability to know what Kush was or something, or rather code was. It comes from the dev side. So we are in a unique position to pass the information to the LLM side of things so that they can have that data to work with. So the very first thing I wanted to show is how prompting is not just a random thing. It needs to be accurate. It needs to be precise in terms of how you prompt things. And context really adds a lot. And we are enabling our products with that. Any question on that before I go to Figma?
I have no questions. No questions from chat.
Perfect. So let me show you what Figma looks like. This is a typical Figma type of interface where this time a UI UX designer is going to create an application, a flow within that application, or something like searching, registering, you get photos and so on. So it's something really simple. I'm gonna go just a little bit this way so you can see a little bit better for one particular part of the application. So you have a lot of things going on here. You have cars, you have register, you have sign in. And so we're gonna focus on this here. And what we have in Figma for designers is a plugin. It's called the Localizer Lingoport plugin. And that plugin is gonna take those strings that are here that you want to be translated. So maybe Jane, you don't want to be translated, but you want to translate register and next. And from this, you will be able to ship the locale because this has been sent now to Localizer. It's been translated with ChatGPT. And I'm going to show you that in Localizer, this was captured automatically, that register screen. Mm-hmm. And so what we just talked about before, passing the context with an image and a prompting when passing to ChatGPT can be fast, can be close to accurate. And you're going to see the French translation for that. S'inscrire, suivant. So that's thanks to our plugin. But in addition to the translation, we want to create files for developers. So this is in the Figma world. And we want developers to say, well, okay, s'inscrire, I don't really care about that. What I care about is what is the reference to use in my code? And that reference is called a key. And when you go to the key side of things here, this is the key that developers want. When they have that key and the locale is English, that will show in the interface like this. When you have that key and the locale is French, it will show this way. If it's German, it will show that way, and so on. So when they code, they don't code to say, I want registrieren or s'inscrire. They just want to say, I want that key, that reference, mm-hmm. locale, and I'll know what my application will do based off of that. So the very first thing is, like other plugins, maybe we deal with the translation, we generate the key. I'm going to go to what the localizer side of things looks like here in strings, just to have the pendant of what we did earlier. And you see register here, the one that we just did. This was captured automatically from Figma, passed to ChatGPT. It could have been passed to, you know, Trellis Enterprise or XTM or whatever, with the prompt and everything. So they could have done it in a different way. It is now returned back to Figma. But we want developers to have access to that. So in Command Center, you can say, well, create that for our developers. And if you do that, then those will now have, I'm going to go back to register somewhere, maybe this one. Those here, you can now see what happened in the repository. And that key was created with register in English, in a file that the developer wants, in the form that the developer wants. The fact that EN is here was determined by the dev. The name of the file was determined by the dev. And then if they want to have it in French, for example, based on the translation that was done earlier, you'll see that s'inscrire is right there, which was the translation that was used in Figma here in French. So we're really completing the loop. We have, just like Adam said, really early in the overall cycle of creating an application for a worldwide audience. You first have the design. You can have the design for the functionality, but now you can have the design also for localization. Check whatever you want, change however you want it. You can create and generate the resource files for developers over and over again. It's not a one-time thing. Maybe you've created one part of the application and you want to move to the next part of the application. You regenerate and it will be right there for you, for the developer. If the developer decides to change this in English to say, well, I want to add now an error message to this here, they can add an error message at the end of this. It will not be touched by the generation coming from Figma. It will be its own thing, and that will be sent for translation because it's something new, something that has not been translated before. So you can see how we are not only bridging the gap between dev and localization, but also we're helping going from UI UX to development together with localization. So that's kind of the basic demo that I want to show today. Adam, back to you.
All right. Thanks. One little thing I'm just going to mention here that is kind of important, particularly for development teams, but it should be important to localization teams. You'll notice that when Olivier checked on the completion of localization or the completion of the translation, even via LLM, but via anything, he went to the repository. He clicked a button and went to the repo, not to the TMS.
Right.
The source of truth.
The actual source of truth.
Right. That's what's in the repo. It's not what's in the TMS. That's a very big difference. It may seem like semantics to some, but it's really important.
You guys speak to product guys all the time. You speak to loc guys all the time.
Right.
I speak to mostly loc teams. I never talk to product or engineering, but mostly I'm speaking to loc teams. And one thing, if I had to put a gun to my head, I had to give you one thing that all loc teams have in common. It's that they are fighting to get more support, fighting to get more influence, fighting their way left into the development life cycle, like you were saying, right? And one of my, and I have some case studies that work, that it's gone really well. I have some case studies that it hasn't gone very well, right? But one thing I see go wrong when a loc team wants to shift left is that they're not focusing on how they can add value and solve problems of the dev team. we're too focused on educating about the importance of localization. Look how important we are. Oh, we're not just a checkbox, right? But what we need to be doing is providing value to the dev teams, giving the product teams what they need. And this is why I love seeing things like this, because this is something that enables loc team. Like, heck, if you're a dev team, this is interesting to me if I'm a dev team leader, right? If I'm a loc leader, this is interesting to me because it's something that I can use to add value to my stakeholders, if that makes sense.
Well, yes. I mean, to add to that, I'm going to say that the way that developers work is they have all kinds of integrated tools. There's first of all the stuff that merges their work with other people's right. works and right. sets them up for review. That's continuous integration. But they have like bug checking, they have integrated testing, all kinds of services, coding quality evaluations that happen just. It's part of the machine. It's part of the mechanics, right? Mm-hmm. And so the idea to hand off localization and then it comes back later, that's naturally sort of like, well, that's going to make it so that localization is not my problem for developers. And if localization is not part of the life and demonstration of how the software works, the visibility, it's right. human nature. It's not my problem.
Right.
This is out of my scope.
I get it. Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. I get it for sure.
So the more we can make it easy for developers and make the presence of like, hey, this is, you know, when you think about it for a developer, localization should be a really cool thing. Hey, my work is going to be digested around the world. That's like super freaking cool.
I know. We got a branding issue, man. We got a PR. I don't know. But because we're too big of pains in the asses. We ask too much without adding any value.
You know, I'll also say something that I got to say that the localization professionals of today are light years ahead of, you know, say where they were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But they're still, you know, sort of basic issue. A lot of times people are in localization because they got a degree that included French or Spanish or whatever. You know, they come from the linguistic background. So, right. And of course, software is just one part of the thing they do. And remember, in terms of volume, you know, it's not like software, the UIs generate the bulk of the words.
They don't. They do. Exactly. Right? It can be right. very little.
And you know, there's another problem with localization is for it to be continuous, like Olivier mentioned, like one project might have three words or five words that have changed, right? It would be very reasonable for whoever's doing the human translation to say, well, I'm not working on that. I'm not going to fire up this file in my whole environment and get my hand around this.
These are the challenges of managing localization.
Right. And, you know, the customer's paying 15 cents a word or whatever. Like, it's like there's no business case there, right? Other than the rest of the world.
I wouldn't spit out my gum for 15 cents, right? I'm certainly not going to log into a TMS.
Right, right. So the idea that I'm going to worry about minimums, which not every vendor charges, but they are a reality for a lot of people.
And I understand why. There's a time and place, right?
Right.
I understand. We're saying a lot of controversial stuff. Anyone thinks we're being reach out to Adam, reach out to me. I promise you we're not as controversial as you think.
Not that exciting. For words to pool up. You know, like, hey, I'm not going to work on three words. I'll work on 300.
That has been my preference. If it's not P1, I mean, if it's a P0 bug fix, then no, right? Yeah. Pay the minimum fee, but otherwise let the words pull up.
Yeah, let them pull up. So the idea of this is, you know, it's always on. You know, there are no minimums for an LLM. I mean, you know, and the other thing, like somebody's going to ask about it, we're finding it's not expensive. It's not like this visual thing costs like all these tokens. But anyway, I have a few final points and then maybe we can get some
Holy moly, we're almost out of time. Yeah, final points. Do you want screen sharing? All right, well, that's going to...
I'm back.
Y'all got to stare at my ugly mug for a little bit until I get the screens all fixed again. All right, yeah. I think we're good.
Okay, so some last, you know, summary. Speed is of the essence. I mean, at Loke World, Wayne Borland from Dell got up and said, speed is really important. And speed doesn't mean waiting 2 days, 5 days. We think speed is like, hey, I want right away. I want to see this. What does this look like? Yeah. You know, collaboration during design that's ready for development. That really puts localization in a new sort of requirements, place. Now we're gonna, it's more in your face. It's nothing but good for the localization team. I'll also say that when we talk to development teams like we do, they get really excited about Figma to dev. It's a lot less work for them. They don't have to manage keys. They don't have to like do all that. It's just like, it's done. Beautiful. A high degree of accuracy when you do things this way with an LLM. The fears are still going to be there, but you know, it's like anything, you use it and hey, it's working pretty well. And now I also have a fail-safe way to look at this. And by the way, you can do that through the TMS. We also have a localizer QA product that lets you run the application, actually make changes, which is super useful if like you have the sales team in Japan that's like unhappy with the translation. They can actually give their input and you can decide to adopt it or not on the translation by running the app. They don't have to know what a translator workbench is, which they might not. No drag on development. I'm reading these things off, but you get the idea. All of the features that I talked about, and you cannot underestimate the cost pressure that's on localization. I mean, geez, we've seen over the last 2 years entire localization teams getting decimated. Right. Like you said, they're under-resourced, underfunded.
Well, because LLMs are going to solve all of that. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier. Yeah. This is the debate we're going to be having. Is localization a tech problem or a people problem, right, to be solved? And right now, with the AI hype and everything that's going around it, people are approaching it like a tech problem. And I say, awesome, let's see where this goes. We'll learn from each other's mistakes along the way.
Well, and, to that effect, I know that you probably use AI to write a lot of your material, right?
Hell, I used AI to write the intro to this podcast today, right?
Right. But you went over it. So there's a human aspect also, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think of AI for me as the great procrastination killer.
You did talk to Renato last week because he stole your line or you stole his
line.
He just said that to me yesterday.
About a year.
Yeah.
I mean, when ChatGPT-3 was made public, the very first thing I did was write love poems to my wife.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yeah.
But I had to review them, and I had to correct them, and sort of thing. So there's always a human element that needs to be on top of things. But if you want fast, you need automation, and you need to take... relax that human dependency.
Right. You need automation and you need to understand, this is the other big conversation our industry is having. What is quality and what is good enough, right? That conversation is becoming more and more important because expectations are shifting, blah, 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 right? So if it's good enough, who cares? You can have instantaneous, you tool it, right? You got to set everything up, but then you can have instantaneous machine generated translations, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good deal. I wouldn't want it on my marketing campaign, right? So lots of challenges to solve.
Right. But, like we said, we're seeing very good, even when you have a human translate a UI, you still have error.
Of course.
You still have a review process. Oh, yeah. So that really hasn't changed. You know, what's different is we're not assuming MT plus human before we ship a product, right? We're saying we're going to ship. When I say ship, I don't mean ship the final product, but we're going to return right away a near or maybe human level translation that happened via this method. And then we're going to apply the humans to clean it up later.
Right.
But it's always on.
Right. Well, awesome. I'm just watching the clock here. We did use the whole hour. We were worried about that.
I'm worried about questions.
I don't have any questions from the chat.
That's scary.
So let me see. Oh, or do I? Victor here. Let's see. Victor, this is very informative. I tuned in a little late, but I'm picking up the essences of really quickly because of clearly. Keep up the great work, says Victor, but no questions. Right?
All right.
Thank you, Victor. I might have missed some. The stream cut out for a little bit midstream, but yeah, I think we're good. But here's the deal. Most people watch these as a recording or they listen to the podcasts. They're not everybody can join at 10 a.m. specifically, for the live stream. So let us know, and then I'll wrap us up here. How can people get in contact with you?
So, if you have a visual to the screen, adam@lingoport.com reaches me. It's one of the benefits of being the big kahuna. I get to have alternate email addresses. But anyway, adam@lingoport.com will reach me. Write to me personally. I will look at it. I will handle it. And if it needs to be forwarded to a more technical answer, I'll do that too. So welcome that.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Adam. Thank you, Olivier. I will take us out here. Ladies, gentlemen, chat. We are out of time for today. So if you enjoyed this episode of NIMZ Live, join us next week when we have a couple coming up. You can find out what those are by going over to our LinkedIn page and checking out our upcoming events. And you can click that sign up button to be notified when we go live next time. I appreciate our guests today, Adam and Olivier. I appreciate my colleagues here at NIMZ Insights doing all the hard work so I can have these interesting conversations. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, who are joining us live today. And I look forward to next time. Cheers.